Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopijana Vallabha Giri Vanadhari Yasura Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tera Vanachari
Yamuna Tera
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Vanadhari Yasura Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tera Vanachari
Yamuna Tera Vanachari
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Yasura Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tera Vanachari Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada,
Jaya Prabhupada,
Jaya Radha Shyam Sundara, Radha Shyam Sundara Jainitya Leela Pravista Asta Parasata Sisi Manasra Vangres A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Premsa Kaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Sri Radha Shivasri Gaur Bhakti Vendi Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Shama Sunda Gopa Gopinata Shama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai Rantaraj Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Gaur Bhimanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the lotus feet of Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, Chapter 16, Text 13, Text 14, and Text 15. I thought we'd just chant this all in unison today as we go through these three verses so as not to take up extra time. So it's a nice purport with a lot of wonderful points in it so we can all collectively chant. Tatra tatro pashumvana svapuvesham mahatmanam pragreyamanam chayasha krishna mahatma sukacham atmanam cha pratiratam ashvatam no svatejasa sneham cha vrishnipatanam tesham bhaktim cha keshave tebhya paramasantushta Prityujim Vitalochana Mahadhanani Vasamsi Dadoharam Mahamana Tatra Tatra. Everywhere the king visited. Upashunvana. Continuously he heard. Swapurvesham. About his own forefathers. Mahatmanam. Who were all great devotees of the Lord. Pragiyamanam. Those who were thus addressing. Cha. Also. Yasa. Glories. Krishna. Lord Krishna. Mahatya. Glorious acts. Sukacham. Indicating. Atmanam. His personal self. Cha. Also. Paritranam. Delivered. Ashvatamana. Of Ashvatama. Ashtra. Weapon. Tejasa. Powerful rays. Sneham. Affection. Cha. Also. Vrishni Partanam. Excuse me. Between descendants of Vrishni and those of Pritha. Desham. All of them. Bhaktim. Devotion. Cha. Also. Keshave. Unto Lord Krishna. Tibya, unto them. Parama, extremely. Santushta, please. Paramam, Santushta, extremely pleased. Priti, attraction. Ujjvambita, pleasingly open. Lochana, one who has such eyes. Mahadhanani, valuable riches. Vasamsi, clothing. Dado, gave in charity. Haran, necklace. Mahamana, one who has a broader outlook. Translation, Srila Prabhupada. Whenever the king visited, he continuously heard the glories of his great forefathers, who were all devotees of the Lord, and also of the glorious acts of Lord Krishna. He also heard how he himself had been protected by the Lord from the powerful heat of the weapon of Ashvatthama. People also mentioned the great affection between the descendants of Vrishni and Pritha due to the latter's great devotion for Lord Keshava. The king, being very pleased with the singers of such glories, opened his eyes in great satisfaction. Out of magnanimity, he was pleased to award them very valuable necklaces and clothing. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Kings and great personalities of the state are presented with welcome addresses. This is a system from time immemorial, and Maharaj Parikshit, since he was one of the well-known emperors of the world, was also presented with addresses of welcome in all parts of the world as he visited those places. The subject matter of those welcome addresses was Krishna. Krishna means Krishna and his eternal devotees, just as the king means the king and his confidential associates. Krishna and his unalloyed devotees cannot be separated, and therefore, glorifying the devotee means glorifying the Lord, and vice versa. Maharaj Parikshit would not have been glad to hear about the glories of his forefathers, like Maharaj Yudhishthira and Arjuna, had they not been connected with the acts of Lord Krishna. The Lord descends specifically to deliver his devotees, Paritranaya Sadunam. The devotees are glorified by the presence of the Lord because they cannot live for a moment without the presence of the Lord and his different energies. The Lord is present for the devotees by his acts and glories. And therefore, Maharaj Parikshit felt the presence of the Lord when he was glorified by his acts, he meaning the Lord, especially when he was saved by the Lord in the womb of his mother. The devotees of the Lord are never in danger, but in the material world, which is full of dangers at every step, the devotees are apparently placed into dangerous positions. And when they are saved by the Lord is glorified. Lord Krishna would not have been glorified as the speaker of Bhagavad Gita, blanked out on my page, as the speaker of Bhagavad Gita had his devotees, like the Pandavas, not been entangled in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. All such acts of the Lord were mentioned in the addresses of welcome, and Maharaj Parikshit, in full satisfaction, rewarded those who presented such addresses. The difference between the presentation of welcome addresses today and in those days is that formerly the welcome addresses were presented to a person like Maharaj Parikshit. The welcome addresses were full of facts and figures, and those who presented such addresses were sufficiently rewarded. Whereas in the present days, the welcome addresses are presented not always with factual statements, but to please the post holder, and are often full of flattering lies. Let that hang there for a minute. And rarely are those who present such welcome addresses rewarded by the poor receiver. Om Jnanata Madandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmanitam Yinatasmai Sigurve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachanam Panvindam Jayati Vim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Shri Guruhim Dhinitanam Avancha Kopaturi Vrishcha Kripa Sindhu Vare Vacha Patitanam Pavane Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Shri Advaita Gadara Shurasri Gaura Bhakti Vinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. My only constant companion, my only friend, my guru, my wealth, that which has delivered me, my great fortune, and the source of my good luck, the form through which I taste pleasure, my obeisances unto you, O Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we're getting a continued look at the activities of Maharaj Parikshit as he travels throughout the globe. Tamahar gave us an insight into these various places the king visited yesterday. It's worth noting what kind of travels these were that he was doing. This wasn't a vacation trip. It wasn't just like a fun in the sun weekend. It wasn't a getaway from the tedium of work life that everyone experiences. But this was about establishing and maintaining his position as the emperor of the world under the religious desire and direction of Lord Sri Krishna. The importance of this is not a minor thing. If it were not the case that he was acting on behalf of the Lord, then how could we explain the vast amount of protections that was extended to him personally and to his entire line of forefathers and foremothers? So this is a example, if you will, of how the Lord was very pleased with his activities. Even though the Lord by this time may not have been so directly connected, nonetheless, the activities of the entire dynasty are all centered around their relationship with Lord Krishna. Now, with this in mind as his agenda, he travels extensively throughout all the regions of the world. And yesterday we got an insight into some of these. It's amazing how in some of these purports, like particularly earlier in the Bhagavatam, Prabhupada will take the different subject matters of the verse and break it down and give expanded views of this. He does this biographically, which is of particular interest to me, when he speaks about the different personalities in the Bhagavatam verses. And then yesterday when he was talking about the different places that Maharaj Prakrit visited. Now, you know, our modern day historians, geographers, they may, shall we say, take issue with what's presented there. They may not agree with everything, but as Prabhupada says, we accept the Srimad Bhagavatam as our standard. And we accept Srila Prabhupada as the presenter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see that all these regions of the modern world that are now broken up into tiny little states and countries ruled by this despot or this misguided leader or this, you know, personality, at this time in history that we're reading about here, we're all under the rule of Maharaj Parikrit. And his goal was not to simply establish his kingdom. I happen to have an interest in Viking history. You know, disgustingly filthy people, but at any rate, they had this vision to conquer more and more, simply for the purpose of conquering. And the Romans were the same way, the British were the same way. It's not a new principle in history, but the Vikings were always planning to take more and more and more, simply for the purpose of increasing their holdings and increasing their influence and, you know, bringing others under their charge like that. This is not the purpose of Maharaj Prakrit. His goal in taking this position and visiting all these places is to establish the principles of Dharma as given by Lord Sri Krishna. This is why Krishna arranged and entered into the battle of Kurukshetra to do away, as Prabhupada says earlier, Pritaraya Sadhanam, to deliver the devotees. So many miscreants were governing the world at that time, even some of their own family relations. Arjuna alludes to this in the early parts of the Bhagavad Gita where he beseeches Krishna, no, no, these are family members, these are seniors, I don't want to cause any harm to them. You know, but Krishna, no, this has to be done. This is my desire. You do it or not, that's okay, it's going to be done. Now, this is interesting because Krishna is saying to Arjuna in that particular scenario, I'm going to see that this is executed. You can be the one to get the credit. I don't want the credit. You know, very rarely do we find someone so magnanimous that no, you take responsibility for it. You get the name and fame. I'm not interested. But this is the mood Krishna gives to him. So this was how important this establishing of this type of leadership was to Krishna. So Arjuna accepted, and as a result, Arjuna became famous. Yudhishthira became famous. Bhima, Nakula, Sahadeva, the whole Pandava family. Pancha Pandava, as Prabhupada uses the phrase in one class I heard. Pancha, I thought that was a nice word. That's a good name, Pancha Pandava Das. At any rate, you serve five people. At any rate, so anyway, now that he's arrived at each place, I mean, I was thinking about it. We can just imagine the pomp and circumstance that must have been there with his arrival at each of these different places. You know, life and wealth, and it was a different standard at this time in history. Even though Kali had begun to show its ugly presence, as we say, raise its ugly head, the remnants of the Vedic culture was still very strong. And we know that a proper reception at that time was there for receiving such great personalities. Foot washing, argyam, madhuparkam, offering of lamps, offering of incense, flower petals, garlands, you know, and then of course, various praises. So all of this was going on, and it was offered by all the various kings that he was visiting. And it was accepted by Maharaj Parikrit, all for the purpose, as Prabhupada notes in the previous verse, Maharaj Prakrit then conquered all parts of the earthly planet and exacted tributes from their respective rulers. Exacted tributes. This means he went there with the purpose of accepting the submission of these various kings and rulers. This was the system. He had been made emperor of the planet. So now it was his duty to go to these different places and get the allegiance. This is a very common theme throughout political history of the world, that allegiances are made between different personalities, and it requires a submissive acceptance of this particular individual as the person in charge. And so this is the system. The difference, of course, is that Maharaj Prakrit is not doing so, as we just mentioned, like these other empires, for the purpose of glorification of himself, for the purpose of, you know, name and fame and expanding all on and on. He's doing this to further establish the principles of Dharma, to establish the reign of a religious type of leadership. So, as Prabhupada notes, this is the system now, it's currently done, that this welcome address would be received and given. We saw this when Prabhupada traveled to many of the great cities of the world, that he was received in this way. There's that one instance that comes to mind when he was arriving in Paris. Big, elaborate reception at the city hall. The pictures are there, you know, standing in front of the royal insignia of the city with great red velvet drapes, all, you know, different styles, and, you know, being received and photo taken, and then sitting and being praised and appreciated and welcomed by the mayor of the city. I mean, this is a pretty common thing in India, you know, that such saintly persons would be received in such a way, and Prabhupada was receiving them anyways when he arrived in Surat with his disciples. I mean, the entire city of Surat turned out. I remember when I was traveling with Padayatra in 86, when we were traveling through Bengal, there was a couple of the villages that were a bit larger that we traveled to, and they arranged royal reception, 108 Kanyakumaris with water pots on their heads, and then behind them, kirtan party, and then behind them, a royal elephant, which I got to sit on top of and ride. That was far out. And then a bullock cart with the deities, and then the other carts that we had with all the devotees. It was just, it was a huge procession. I mean, the procession was longer than the town was big, but this was the way reception was made. So this is very common in India to receive like that, but not so much so in the Western countries. But this is one example here, Paris like that, you know, and of course there are many others. So Prabhupada notes here that the reception that he received was not just flowery words of appreciation for his particular activities, but it extended to the glorification of his lineage, his forefathers, because of their relationship with Krishna. And because the subject matter was Krishna, everyone was very happy to hear it. This is an important point. Our name and fame is something we all seek after. It's part of the nature of our false ego and being in this material world. We want to be the center of attention. We want to be the noted personality. You know, we want our presence to be a point of issue, a point of appreciation, whatever. You know, but here we find that that is easily accomplished when we keep ourselves in connection with Krishna. If we are not keeping ourselves in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is eternally and beautifully glorified, then our name and fame comes and goes. What's that Prabhupada says? Your Napoleon conquered everything, but where is your Napoleon now? And he even mentions about certain saintly persons in India's Mahatma, as he dryly refers. Mahatma Gandhi, he's talking about. He said, the statue is there in the park, and the pigeons are coming and passing stool, and the street sweeper is coming with the broom. He cleans the street and sweeping off with some water the pigeon's stool. So this is not respect and appreciation, you know. But if we keep ourselves in connection with Krishna, here we see 5,000 years later, still appreciation of Maharaj Parikit, appreciation of Yudhishthira, appreciation of Arjuna. You know, Prabhupada's entire purpose in coming was to spread this message, coming here to America. We just celebrated his arrival here, and this is exactly why he came. It's worth noting that when Prabhupada came, he brought the Bhagavatam. He could have brought so many books. Prabhupada knew and studied and read all of these books. He was completely familiar with the writings and the teachings of the Goswamis, he picked the Srimad Bhagavatam. Many times Prabhupada said, these first three volumes, I put everything in there you need to know. So even if we have nothing else, because Prabhupada didn't know how long he was going to be. He suffered the two heart attacks on the way over, and his health had been a challenge. So there was some question how long he would be able to guide and direct us. So with that in mind, power packed the first canto of the Bhagavatam. Fortunately for us, Prabhupada was able to stay with us all the way up through the 10th canto, much longer than he expected, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and so on and so on and so on. So we're very fortunate. But all of these messages Prabhupada's given in this regards are all messages that have been eternally spoken about the appreciation of Krishna and his devotees. Very happy to hear it. Because the subject matter was about Krishna, everyone was happy to hear it. This is the pleasure for a devotee. And why is that? Well, it's noted here that Krishna means Krishna and his devotees. And this is an important point for us on two levels. Part of our reading the Bhagavatam, any of the Shastras, but it is to analyze it, to study it. When we're in university or whatever, we don't just dryly read something repeated. Of course, that's the way it goes on nowadays. You know, I remember when I was in high school, I just repeated geometry. I had no idea what use this is going to be to me further. And let me see, I'm almost 70 and it hasn't come useful yet, so I'm still waiting. Mrs. Harvey, I think you were wrong, but at any rate. You know, but this isn't like that. We have to study the Bhagavatam and look at it and analyze it. Take it apart and see, how does it fit? What are the points being made? How does it apply to my life? So this particular point here, that Krishna means Krishna and his devotees, there's two particular aspects of that. The first is that it gives us encouragement, purpose, and direction to glorify Krishna's devotees. And this means devotees both living and past. This is, of course, one of the motivations behind my own pleasure and commitment to speaking about our Vaishnava Acharyas. This pleases Krishna. And to glorify them, and thus, by glorifying them, please Krishna. Krishna becomes very happy when he hears his devotees glorified. We all become very happy when we hear ourselves glorified. But occasionally our false ego calms down and takes a back seat, and we appreciate hearing other devotees glorified. The second point, and this is one that's particularly significant to us as we're living here in the age of Kali, is that if we criticize devotees, both living and past, this does not please Krishna. We can understand that. That if Krishna is very pleased when we glorify his devotees, what is the other side of that? Everything has two sides. Good, bad, hot, cold, positive, negative. So if on this side Krishna is very pleased when we glorify his devotees, that means on this side Krishna is not pleased if we criticize his devotees. And Prabhupada says it right here in the purport. Krishna and his unalloyed devotees cannot be separated. And therefore, glorifying the devotee means glorifying the Lord. And glorifying the Lord means glorifying the devotee. In Krishna's mind, there is no difference. So therefore, we have to be very careful how we speak about devotees. This is one of the symptomatic faults of our modern technology, you know. It's so easy to, usually if you're in a one-on-one conversation with someone, it becomes a little obvious when you crossed a line or said something inappropriate. But when we're sitting in the privacy of our own office or home behind the computer screen, we tend to say and write anything. This is a nature of Kali Yuga. This is the nature of fault finding. And so we have to be cautious about it. And why do we have to be cautious about it? Well, it is, after all, the first offense to be avoided in the listing of 10 offenses. We want to chant the holy name, and we want to chant the holy name incessantly, but to do that, we have to remove the offenses from our chanting. And so this process of removing the offenses requires us to be attentive to what are those offenses. And the first one is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives to the propagating of the holy name of the Lord. Now, of course, our mind, our ego gets us around that, well, that devotee's not really dedicated their life. You know, they only part-time do something, or if they had really dedicated, I wouldn't have anything to say about them. You know, I mean, we can justify all this stuff all day long. And people do it. We see it. You know? But the fact of the matter is that Krishna looks at it differently. Krishna doesn't say, yeah, you're right. He, you know, well, go, so go ahead. I'll let you, you know. No. I'll give you 2 out of 3 here, okay? No. Krishna's not thinking like that. All right. Now, I mean, he did think like a Pondraka, you know. Okay. I'll forgive you 100 times. 99 times. But that 100th time, you're done. Okay, 99 times? Really? I'm going to commit 99 offenses? I mean, I'm that dull-headed? 99 times in a row I'll offend somebody? The same person. Okay, oh, I just speak bad about all kinds of devotees, you know, but if collectively it was 99. But this was one person, 99 times in a row. And then that 100th time, Krishna said, all right, that's it. Sudarshan manifested and off came his head. And all of his bogus arms and everything else. So, you know, Krishna doesn't look at it like that. You know, Krishna's very protective of his devotees. Therefore, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, you declare it boldly, my devotee never perishes. I'll always protect my devotee. So, anyway, in Prabhupada's lecture on this particular verse, it's one of the great things I've mentioned many times, that being able, with all this technology we have, to go back and get... My wife just ordered one of these little... She's not the most technology-advanced person, so she ordered one of these nice little boxes from somewhere, I don't forget where, and it's got every single audio record of Prabhupada. All the lectures in Srimad Bhagavatam, all the Bhagavad Gita, all the kirtans, all the morning walks, all the things. And there's an amazing little catalog book that comes with it, punch in number 1519, and boom, this one comes up, and you just punch it in, and bingo, there it is, the whole lecture. I mean, it's really pretty far out. I've got these other websites I visit, which are nice, but you've got to kind of sort through. This is just like, so it's really an amazing little device, you know, and it's no bigger than a, well, it's a little bit bigger than a cell phone, but you know, you carry it around with you everywhere you go, and it's just, you can constantly be hearing. So in Prabhupada's lecture on this particular verse here, he draws out a very clear distinction between two different types of people, Mahatma and Duratma. He makes a very, very specific point. Prabhupada says, these two words, Mahatma and Duratma. Mahatma means a great mind or great personalities. Duratma means mischievous. There are these two types of persons, mischievous and magnanimous. Now, just to be clear, we're not talking mischievous like, you know, playful and enjoyable, kind of like Krishna's mischievous nature. And Krishna's sitting with the cowherd boys and he says to Subal, Subal, close your eyes and open your mouth and I'll give you a big sweet ball. Subal wants a sweet ball. Who doesn't want a sweet ball? Especially if it was a glutton. So he closes his eyes and he opens his mouth and Krishna throws a flower in his mouth. And then Krishna laughs and all the cowherd boys laugh and Subal makes a sour face like, wait a minute, that's not a sweet ball. So that's one kind of mischievous. That's Krishna being mischievous. That's not the kind of mischievous Prabhupada's talking about here. Prabhupada explains. Who are they? The Duratma. So they're eating. Material necessities of life it is. Eating. We want to eat something. We must eat to keep this body fit. Then we must sleep after eating. So eating and sleeping. Then after eating, after sleeping, everyone knows, the sex becomes agitated, then mating. So now eating, sleeping, mating, and then there is defending, how to protect myself. Because the world is full of so many enemies. This is the material world. So everyone is struggling very hard how to protect myself. Prabhupada continues. So these four principles, we have our four regulative principles. These four principles, they are the animal principles. So that is the difference. That such animal propensities are there amongst the cats and dogs. And in the human being also. These necessities, they are there. But if we remain captivated only by these four principles, then we remain cats and dogs. It doesn't matter however nicely we are dressed, we remain as cats and dogs, in the category of cats and dogs. The modern civilization is actually that of cat and dog. Although they dress very nicely to become gentlemen, they are duratma. I have many years now, of course, it seems like it's over, but many years gone to Woodstock and sat in the question and answer booth for 4 or 5, 6 hours a day. It's just so wonderful. And this is a point that I often make. This is one of Prabhupada's fundamental preaching points, the difference between humans and animals, cats and dogs, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. You know, and that unless we make that extra step to inquire why are we here, who are we, what is our spiritual nature, that, as Prabhupada says, simply cats and dogs dressing very nicely, but nonetheless cats and dogs. And we want to not fall into that category. That isn't our goal in life, to become very, in another portion of the same lecture, Prabhupada says, yes, to sit very, everyone wants to sit very nicely at a table and chairs with plates and utensils, eating any damn thing. Oh no, he says any nonsense thing. But they must eat very nicely. So by Prabhupada's intervention into our lives, by Prabhupada's instructions into our lives, we're given the opportunity to advance ourselves beyond this point. Now, there's an interesting sidebar that Prabhupada makes when he's speaking about these things. As he gets to the second point, and he says, sleeping, then we must also sleep after eating. So eating and sleeping, and then Prabhupada says, but sleeping is not always, not in this assembly. But after eating, you can sleep. And then on the lecture, on the audio, you hear Prabhupada chuckle. And he chuckles out loud to himself, almost like, you know, he finds this amusing. He says, yes, there is a sleeping place, but it is not here, not now. That is not good. And then you hear him chuckle again. Now, this is actually a real problem for many of us back in the day. I mean, not so much now. I mean, when you sit here, those many of you get this opportunity, you don't look out and see so many people sleeping. But you know, I remember back in the day, it was pretty common. You look around and the bodies are just sleeping left and right in class, you know. There's this one video of Prabhupada, I think it's in Los Angeles. And there's one devotee standing up behind Prabhupada's Vyasasam. And he's just like nodding out seriously. I mean, he's stumbling. You expect any minute for this poor Prabhu to just fall over in a lump on the floor. And again, catching himself, and then and then a couple of seconds later, he begins teetering, and you know, repeatedly this happens, you know. I imagine the devotee, extremely sincere devotee, just didn't get enough sleep that night or something. But I mean, we've all experienced that, you know. And sometimes this would make Prabhupada angry. You can hear it on some of the lectures. While you're sleeping, stand up. You know, and then other times like this one, he just kind of amused by the, you know, futility of it all. You know, just, oh, these disciples of mine, you know, can you just stay awake while I'm talking? So, at any rate, this was going on, you know. So, there's a difference here in this purport that's determined as to who's worthy to speak about. Now, clearly the forefathers of Prithvi, Yudhishthira, Arjuna, Kunti, all the others, they're worthy of such glorification. The praise of them is very pleasing, as Prabhupada says, to hear. And this includes Parikshit himself. Now, it's interesting, as this presentation by these suttas, ungadas, and I forget the third one, as they were speaking, It wasn't that Prickett was coming a little impatient. Okay, yeah, yeah, what about me? You know, are you going to say anything nice about me? You know, that's generally if we're invited somewhere and we know that we're going to, you know, be received nicely, we're kind of attentive like that, you know. So that wasn't his, there was no self-motivation here. But because of his own connection with Krishna, he was spoken of, but he was spoken about in link with that connection. This is how we will be appreciated. Mundane personalities, they get so much glorification, but it is very temporary. One day a person is a very high ranking, high respected, and the next day they're brought down by some scandal, some irreligious activity, some cheating activity. We see this all the time. The material world is filled with this. But if we keep ourselves in connection with devotional service, in connection with Krishna, then we become very glorious because of that connection with Krishna. Now, what is that connection that he had? Well, of course, as Prabhupada says in the purport, his own salvation. That heinous act of Ashwatthama. I mean, just to think about it. Killing children, cutting off their heads, and then being deluded enough to think this would please his superiors, which of course it did not. I mean, in our modern society, if a person killed children and decapitated them and then was captured, I mean, oh my God, the outrage. And then, after being chased and cornered down and captured for this act, he retaliated with an equally heinous act of throwing the Brahmastra weapon at another innocent child in the womb of a mother. Now, Prabhupada takes this point to speak very strongly about the principle of killing children in the womb. This was, you know, just, it was just such a horrible thing for him to do. I mean, Ashwatthama was a pretty low-class guy. And he lacked all Kshatriya qualities. He was a bona fide son of a Kshatriya. So he should have had certain qualities that gave him the intelligence how to behave. Who is innocent? Who is not worthy of punishment? But we don't see that here. Now, it's interesting enough that in spite of all of that lack of qualification, he did have enough Brahman Tejas to call the Brahmastra by mantra. Powerful weapon. So how Krishna saved Maharaj Prickett from that Brahmastra? This is the connection of the story that was told by these speakers. You know, this opportunity to glorify the previous family members is all given. But also his connection to that glorious line is noted here. So Krishna's presence in his life from the very beginning was indicative of how glorious a personality he would be. Now, in closing, I want to read this part of the purport again. I find it just extremely insightful. The difference between the presentation of welcome addresses today and in those days is that formerly the welcome addresses were presented to a person like Maharaj Parikshit, or Raja Rishi, as Prabhupada would use the phrase. The welcome addresses were full of facts and figures, and those who presented such addresses were sufficiently rewarded. Whereas, in the present days, the welcome addresses are presented not always with factual statements, but to please the postholder. And often they are full of flattering lies. And rarely are those who are present, or those who present such welcome addresses, rewarded by the poor receiver. Very foretelling statement here. I mean, if we just apply this anywhere in the world to our modern day politics, what to speak of here in our own country, where we can see very stark parallels to what Prabhupada's saying here, but to any country in the world. We see the very sorry state of affairs and the constant onslaught of Kali Yuga. we see that such words of Prabhupada here, full of flattering lies, that this is what all of your political statements nowadays are. Just, you know, and then the different aspects, you know, left or right, whatever, of the media tear everyone's statements apart to see what, you know, was true, what was not. And so even it's pointed out that regardless of the side of the aisle, as they say they're on, that these lies are spoken, still people support them. So this is Kali Yuga. And even when a man is shown to be a liar, a fool, people still support such personalities throughout the entire world. This is not something exclusive to our American political system. This is going on all over the planet. So lastly, the point the Prabhupada makes is that such persons of exemplary character, speaking in the case of Maharaj Prakrit, are rewarded with suitable gifts. Not like nowadays, you're given some meager pen and pencil set with the personality's name engraved on them, or some tawdry alcoholic drink that's supposed to be very excellent. But they were given real gold, real jeweled necklaces, silks, woolen cloth, suitable gifts. When I was reading that, I was reminded of my father's trip to India. He traveled to many different places around the world and many different places in India as well, him and my mother. He was one of the international directors of the Lions Club. And as such, he was received quite nicely when he traveled in these ways and got many different kinds of valuable gifts, garlands, tilak and kumkum on the forehead. I have pictures of all that. It's quite interesting to see. You know, many kind words were offered. And interestingly enough, in almost every case, these gifts were related to Krishna. Nice hand painting on wood of Parthasarathi, here on the chariot together. A bronze plate with all the demigods and Vishnu in the center. A marble painting etched of the different personalities of the gopis and different girls like that. And so forth, all these different things. Gifts that were of no real understanding to him, but quite suitable to give to a son who would appreciate them. And they're all in my home. So, in this way, some proper gifts were given. You know, but Prabhupada says here, such gifts are not offered by the poor receiver. Now, one may look at that in a couple of ways. Poor receiver, that they have no facility to give gold and jewels and valuable clothing, but also that they are in a poor fund of intelligence that they should do so. Enumerating personalities in this way, this is an important aspect of Vedic culture. Whether it be the Brahminical priest, whether it be the forefathers, whether it be the leaders, there's a way that one reciprocates with them. And this is a very important factor. You know, so poor receiver, unable to or unknowledgeable of the importance of doing so. So anyway, these are some of the points from this very important verse, I think, about the necessity to A, glorify the devotees, and B, keep ourselves in touch with Krishna so that we actually, as Vaishnavas, are worth glorifying. So we'll finish there. If anybody has any comments or questions or corrections, Shri. I will encourage anybody that has questions to speak up, because between my lack of hearing and our mask, it's an impossible feat.
Thank you for your nice class. I'm sure it's mentioned somewhere in the Bhagavatam, but was Prakshit like the last Rajarshi? Was Prakshit like the last Rajarshi?
Let me see. After him. Well, there was Brajanab, who was Krishna's great grandson. He would have come after him. Yeah.
So even though it was the beginning of Kali Yuga, there were still saintly kings?
There were still some leftover remnants, we could say, of the Vedic culture, even though Kali Yuga had begun to make its presence. Yeah, it had not completely dwindled to the sorry state we see it in our modern world quite yet, but it was headed that way quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, and then thank you. The point you made about, you know, the conquering mentality of civilizations that came after the Vedic civilizations. They were all like that, you know, the Greeks and the Romans and Vikings. And it seems also like in the Vedic times, the demons, like the demoniac kings, were also like that. It was just about conquering.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. The mood of acquiring simply for expanding one's personal wealth or personal name and fame, this is the symptom of, you know, conquering nations, you know. And Prabhupada liked to point this out, you know. The British Empire, the Roman Empire, you know, this was a favorite of his to point these types of things out, that these are no longer there because they're not connected to Krishna, because there is no religious principle. Yeah.
And there's so much like suffering that goes with that, you know, like so much killing and, you know, subjugating people, and then even like the leaders themselves, like they're often, you know, targeted by other people, like they don't even make it, you know, they're assassinated or whatever, and the new guy comes on. So it's just such a horrible program.
Well, you know, and additionally, in those times, the leaders would go out and lead the battle, and as Prabhupada says now, they sit in a comfortable office and send all the young men to die. So additionally, not your Kshatriya quality of leadership. Yeah. All right, we'll finish there. Thank you, everyone. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.